So please say and spell your name for me.
My name is Johnny Rush, spelled J-O-H-N-N-I-E, Rush, R-U-S-H.
What is your date of birth, including the year?
I was born August the 7th, 1931.
How would you describe your ethnic background?
My ethnic background, I was born and raised up in Mississippi, Starksville. And my family was farmers. My father liked the farming.
But what would you consider yourself? Are you African American?
I'm African American.
And what is your religion?
I'm a Baptist. Second Baptist Church has been my church for years.
What is the highest level of formal education you have completed?
I went to Michigan State Normal College for 2 years, and then I went to Washtenaw Community College for 2 years in social service, and I went in business administration at Michigan State Normal College.
Okay. What is your marital status?
My marital status, I've been married to my wife 59 years.
Okay.
This year.
How many children do you have?
I have 3 children. I have 2 girls and 1 boy.
Okay. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
It was 5 boys in my family and 1 sister.
What is your primary occupation?
My primary occupation now, I am a licensed barber, running a barber shop for the last 55 years.
Wow. So you haven't retired, you're still working?
I'm still working, yes.
Okay. Now we're going to part two, which is going to jog your memories about your childhood and youth. This part of the interview is about your childhood and youth. Even if these questions jog your memories about other times in your life, please only respond with memories for this part of your life, okay? What was your family like when you were a child?
My family, my father and mother, they was very disciplined. They showed the love and family unity. And that's very important to me.
What sort of work did your parents do?
My father was a farmer. He liked farming. He picked cotton and did it all. So he liked farming.
Did you have farmland?
We finally owned our land at one time. He was sharecropping, but he finally wound up owning his own property and farming for himself.
Okay. Were there any special days or events or family traditions you remember from your childhood?
Yes, well, I know that my mother and them always liked to celebrate the holidays, you know, like Christmas, Easter, and, you know, they was very, very good at that. They enjoyed that.
What kinds of things did you do on those holidays?
We got together, we had dinner together, and we had our little fun, social together, having fun with each other, you know. And it was just a nice, friendly family orientation that we just enjoyed one another. Ate and played games, you know.
Played games?
Yes.
You told me something about visiting at Christmas time in the neighborhood?
We had company that visited us, and then we would visit them, you know. It was a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked forward to that. It was very, very enjoyable being together as families and friends.
Did you play any sports or join any other activities outside of school?
Yes. I was on the boxing team, and I also ran track, and that was a lot of fun, and Very excited.
Were you good?
I was good. I always had the determination to be good.
Did your family have any special sayings or expressions during this time of the holiday seasons or traditional? Any special sayings?
Oh, you mean talk? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, they always reminded us that it was good, that it was sort of like a family unity, that togetherness, and you could enjoy one another and have fun and get more acquainted. And that was very enjoyable. Well, not really, I look forward to that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Were there any changes in your family life during your school years?
My family life or my life?
Your life.
Well, yes, after I was doing my school years, it was some changes because I had to walk a certain distance back and forth to school because we didn't have the transportation. But we never lost the interest of going to school. And that was very, very happy with my parents to know that we had the determination to go. And we walked almost 10 miles a day, 5 miles one way, 5 miles back to school.
And this was in Mississippi?
This is in Mississippi, mm-hmm. Starksville, Mississippi.
You lived during the era of segregation. Can you speak about that? Were your schools segregated?
No, my school wasn't segregated. My school was all blacks, and I had an experience though when I left home at 17, and it was quite a change when I came to Ann Arbor. Being only black in the class, it was quite a transition in my life. I had to make quite an adjustment.
So that was a big change.
That was a big change for me, but I finally got comfortable as time went by.
Mm-hmm. So you, where was it you went to school?
I went to school here when I came to Ann Arbor. I was a very young person. I went to school at Ann Arbor High here in Michigan.
Okay. So that was a big change for you.
Yes, it was.
In Mississippi, all of the students were black?
All the students that was attending school was black. We was all black.
And you've already told me that you walked to school in Mississippi.
Yeah, okay. We walked to school every day. Didn't have no bus ride.
So do you have anything else to say about how when you came to Ann Arbor High and you were the only black person, did you say, in your class?
It was quite a transition for my adjustments. But I always had the determination and I adjusted very well and I had to express my feelings, which I've learned early. Because when I was approaching in class and wanted to digest some of my opinions and ideas, seemed like my teacher ignored me. But I had a chance to talk with him leaving class one day and told him how I felt, and my disposition is the first experience I had being in a class with all white. He took some very serious consideration and was very helpful in me and helped me through my classes.
So you were 17 and you came up here by yourself?
I came here by myself. I had some problems down there and I didn't run away from home. And I don't know whether I should get in that detail or not with you, but I can tell you.
Okay. But your parents, what did they think of you leaving?
My parents were very happy for me to leave because it was some disturbance within me with a couple white people, okay. Adults, and that's where the involvement got started. We had some opposition. Okay. We wound up fighting. I whooped up a couple of them, and And my parents got afraid for me, to find me hanging out a tree or something. Okay. And I got afraid, and I just told them I felt I could make it on my own. And they acknowledged it and gave me that disposition, and I took it. Okay. And they, in the end, felt very happy that I came here and had that drive and kept myself.
So who did you stay with?
When I first came here, I stayed with my uncle, Fred Rush. And then later on, I had always had that self-independence. Then I wound up getting me a little small room. And I got me a little job. And I continued to school. And that's what I did.
Always. At 17.
At 17 years old. I walked around a lot of days hungry, but I always had a direction of mind through the will of God. I was sitting down one day and I was thinking about how I'm going to eat, and I wound up giving me a job working where I could have my meal free. And the gentleman, my boss, liked me so well because I was so aggressive. He would come and relieve me and let me get my meal and let me go back and give me an hour to look over my books.
Where were you working?
I was working at Michigan Union up on campus.
Okay.
Very much. George Poland was my boss. He was a very nice, wonderful man.
Okay. All right, we're going to go to part three, and this set of questions covers a fairly long period of your life. From the time you completed your education, entered the labor force, or started a family until all of your children left home and you and your spouse retired. Well, neither one of you are retired, right?
Well, my wife retired, but
right,
she's
okay.
Quit, but I'm not
so
retired.
So we might be talking about a stretch of time spanning as much as four decades. So, all right, after you finished high school, where did you live?
After I finished high school, I went and got me a little small like apartment, and I got a job, and I was a little bit more independent, and I felt good about that because I had the privacy and I was in control of what my function were.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to first job after I got out of school, I worked at Kaiser and Frazier's. That was the first time I worked at a plant when they made the Henry J. Carr and Kaiser. And I got various jobs thereafter.
So how long did you remain in that apartment, or did you move around?
I was very consistent in what I did. I stayed in the apartment after, you know, I went to college and I got drafted, and that's when I gave up my apartment. All other times I was there, and the person I rented from really respected me because I respected his place, and I never was in the mood with just moving around. So mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. So I stayed there in the apartment till I got drafted in service.
And how long were you in the service?
I was in service almost 4 years.
Okay.
I was in the Korean conflict in the Army. And I went all over Europe and all over, you know. That's why I spent all most of my time over in the, you know, foreign country.
Okay, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your married and family life. First, tell me, how did you meet your spouse?
I met my wife going to Second Baptist Church. I went there, and I always considered what my mother told me when I left home. Son, you go to church sometime. I know you ain't going every Sunday, but I kept it in mind. I did, and I joined Second Baptist Church, and I got very active. I started teaching Sunday school. I got in the Blue Crown Choir, and I became an usher. And that's how I met my wife. And after I got drafted and went in service, the young lady that I have today, she got my address and started writing me and told me how she enjoyed me and she really cared so much about me. And One day she wanted to be my wife.
Now,
and I couldn't
would
believe.
She tell me the same story?
She would tell you that.
Okay.
And so I did my time in service. When I came back, I was at church that Sunday, welcome to Second Baptist Church here in Ann Arbor. And I decided I'd go by and meet her mother. And her mother, and told her who I was, and she said, "Oh, you that Johnny Rush?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Oh, this little girl of mine, she says she just love you, want to be," I said, "be your wife. You can have her." She was joking, I guess. And so we laughed. And she was very nice to me after she met me and seen what kind of person I was. Mm-hmm. And time passed. She found out my birthday. And I was a little Casanova back then, because a lot of ladies was sought after me. And so got my size and went out and rented a machine and made me a shirt. And that's when I really started thinking, this girl really care about me. And my other girls that I was liking, they was just laughing, and I started taking her serious. And it started from there, and we started meeting at church, and I finally started going out and having lunch with her. And from there, we kept on, and finally, I married her at 18 years old, right out of high school.
She was right out of high school.
Right, mm-hmm. And we've been together ever since. 59 years this year.
Okay.
And we're still together. And we raised 3 kids, 2 girls and 1 boy.
Tell me about your children and what was like when they were young living at home.
It was quite an experience because my wife and I, and we didn't never seek out help from anyone. And unfortunately, we had 2 kids within the same year. My oldest daughter is just 11 months apart. My daughter, Rhonda, is 11 months older than my other. Had them right together, and we sort of got a little tight about that. And as time went along, it was about 4 years before my son came along. But we had a job, but we feel today that we did a good job because they turned out to be very good kids. We kept that unity and discipline. And been many days that I've had my daughters to call me up and they say, "Hi, Daddy, I just want to thank you." And I said, "Baby, what you think? You ain't got no birthday today. I didn't send you nothing." She said, "Daddy, this is the way you brought us up." And I think he was telling me that because each one of them have 2 kids apart, you know. My oldest daughter have 2 girls, and my youngest daughter have a girl and a boy. And they see what the experience is in raising kids. That's what I see now. And they just say, "Well, it was just so good." And my grandkids, was beautiful, excellent, smart in school and everything. And that makes me feel good today. They say, "I thought you was the meanest father you could have, but now I see what you did for us." And I laugh about it, and I feel good about it today.
What kind of things did you all do for fun?
My wife and my kids?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we played a lot of little, you know, activities like, you know, work together with chess and, you know, stuff like that. And I played a little outside fun ball with them, and we went fishing together, and just a lot of little things that they enjoyed, you know. And they talk about some of that today, and we really enjoyed it. We had that really family unity, and that was something I'm glad I was taught. And I think I learned that from being a Southern man out of Mississippi, because the family worked very close. And I feel very disappointed where I see today. Families don't have that family unity like they used to. And that's very unfortunate. And I see that.
Was there any fun thing that you all enjoyed more than any other?
Well, we enjoyed the holidays more than others because we had other little things we done together, games, and had good food, and you had, you know, company and all of this, and it was just a combination that really expanded and made everybody feel good and enjoy themselves being together, you know. And that was really nice. We enjoyed it very much.
Now this next section is going to be about work and retirement, but you haven't retired. So,
no, I haven't retired.
Tell me again what your main field of employment.
My main what?
Field of employment, job.
Yeah, well, I'm a barber. I own and operate my own shop. And that's was my primary objective. I want to always have some control of my direction, you know. I saw my uncle, he used to be a barber. And that's what really dawned on me and gave me that inner will. And I made quite a sacrifice to be where I am today. A barber drove to Detroit 6 days a week.
That's where you went to get your training?
To get my barber license. Mm-hmm. And I worked at St. Joe Mercy Hospital as an orderly part-time. And I learned the discipline and whatever you have to do, my father always told me, success is about hard work, son, and sacrifice. And that reveals to me today, which is very true, just as true as I'm sitting here. And I went and got my barber license and served for my apprenticeship from John Easley here in Ann Arbor down on Ann Street. And then I went back and took my state board exams to be eligible to open my own shop. And I opened up my own shop for myself in 1961.
And that was on Ann Street?
That was on Ann Street, and I stayed there for about 16 years. And things got a little out of control up there because a lot of drug trafficking started, and it really destroyed the whole block in that area. I seen 5 young black male men get killed. And it was very frightening, and I started losing a lot of my business. Even my own relatives started getting afraid to come down. I was cutting hair one day in my shop, and I let 2 guys come in and use my restroom, and they got back there and got tussling over the gun or something. The gun went off, and that bullet ricocheted back up old near where I was cutting hair. And my own uncle jumped up and said, well, you ain't in the family, but I can't be coming down here. And that was quite a turmoil for me. I had to think about it, and finally, where I am today was a gas station.
Well, tell me a little bit more about the Ann Street. You had your business. There were other businesses down there.
Yeah, you had. It was, you know, that's the next thing that bothers me. That's what I'm concerned about. And if I had time, I would get on, try to get on the council. We don't have no representation here in Ann Arbor, and it's amazing how we as black people has regressed. When I came here, Ann Arbor had more visibility of service and combination within our race. You had Dave Keenan, they had his nice Bill Tablin, Bill Vault. You had Stanford McKinney, had his hat block and shoe repair shop. You had Pelly Bullock around the corner, had his nice little dry cleanings. You had the friendly corner. You had 2 restaurants that right there in that area. Mr. Lewis Harris had an auto repair, automobile business shop. And you had Mr. Money. He had a nice little gas station. And I look around now and I see what I see now, and it's just sort of heartaching to me. The only thing we seem to have here visible now is churches. Mm. And they should be more community orientated. And I said that implying to my brother, well, he's the minister, and I was teasing him about the ministers and how they getting over now, for getting new cars furnished, free, and gas, phone bill, Now, I was teasing, they're just little legal pimps now. And I gave them some ideas because I was an urchin. I seen how much money goes to the church. And I gave him that idea and made some suggestion to him, and I wish I had brought them with me. He wound up following my direction, and I helped assist him. And he wound up building a 54-unit low-income multiple housing project. And I was shocked. And he cut the river in 2010. I was there. And just within 2 months, every one of the apartments rented out. And then he turned around and built the Motherwell Education Center. And it's just amazing. And that just shows you what the need we have in your community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say is the biggest difference in your field of barbering from the time you started until now? What is the biggest difference? I know you've talked about the lack of other businesses.
Well, the difference now, people, I don't know what really is happening now. One thing I've learned too back when I different than first started, people believed in the appearance and the personality and the combination. Number one, you learn that, you know, you in business, and they didn't go around plaiting their hair, not, you know, all that stuff, and didn't realize. And they had this common judgment about the health and physical conditions. You know, I look at a lot of these guys wearing their hair all long and tight, and you wash your head, you can't wash the lather off. I had a guy come in my shop one day, all the braids, and his head was itching, and he talked to me and he got it cut off. And he come to find out when I got it down, he had lice in his head. And he just liked to fell out. So the disposition is that accommodation of service too. That unity that, you know, helping one another. And that's what the job, and they felt getting a haircut in the professional shop was very important. But now, it's amazing what I see every day. And we should be much more focused and elevated. And we seem to be going the other way. Don't care how we look. And that's have really had an effect on me. It's been a very interesting thing in meeting a variety of people and you know, communication line and talking with people. It's very good.
Tell me about a typical day for you. In your shop, how does a typical day go?
A typical day is, you have a lot of people, and just, is it your special day you're talking about, or just ordinary
just
day?
Just an ordinary day.
A typical day for me is coming in and meeting a lot of the ordinary middle-aged customers. And the exchange of communication and ideas and direction is a good combination there. And it elevates you because you know they speak with the interest and they're serious about it. And you look forward to that because you're accommodating one another. And these are things I learned about every day that I have lived. We have to recognize that we all need one another. Mm-hmm. We all need one another. And that means, and that generates unity and direction and strength. And we're getting away from that. And I don't understand how these things are happening now. When we look at our young generation, they should be more elevated. We got all the opportunities and assessments. And they're not doing well as our foreparents. And that's all to say. But I look forward to it because it's an experience every day that, you know, you meet different people with different personalities. And, you know, and my business is a variety of business. I cut a lot of white customers' hair as well as, you know, my own people. And that's important. And the exchange of ideas and communication is an elevation. It means something. It gives you that drive.
How did life change when your wife retired? You're still working, so. Did it change and the children were away?
Well, I think it changed more for her. And that's something she probably would say the same thing or tell you. You know, that's another thing that I concentrate on each day. Is you retire and you've been active all your life, you get around and you might take notice. Sometime you retire and the next year, a month or two, or sometimes 6 months, you're deceased and gone. I think it was quite a turnaround for her, sitting around and, you know, just sort of getting bored and inactive. And I talk now, she's working a little bit part-time now.
Right.
And it's just...
What is she doing part-time? Tell me about, because she used to work. Tell me about...
Well, it's part-time. She's a ride with the Ann Arbor bus system with the kids. And she sits in and keep control and watch over the kids doing the transportation to and fro from school. Mm-hmm. And she found that to be very interesting. And the idea of being around people and, you know, because you can get really bored just being alone all the time, especially when you've been active. And that's something that I try to keep myself conscious of, you know, just retiring and don't have no other plans to be active in anything. And I'm aware of that.
Now, she worked at a bank and was...
Yeah, my wife was one of the first black managers here in Ann Arbor. She managed three banks here in Ann Arbor. She managed the Great Lakes Bank call. She managed a bank out here out on Hewitt Road, and she had up here, down here in the mall here in Ann Arbor. And one out here on Plymouth Road. And that's why she retired from the bank. And that was quite an experience for her.
When thinking back on your working life, and you're still working, is there any important social or historical event that was taken during this time that personally had an effect on you?
In my what?
Is there any historical event, like maybe the Civil Rights Movement or some of that had an effect on you personally?
Well, the most important thing is the integration and seeing what Reverend Martin Luther King have done in his past. And this, the idea right now, you and I said, and I never would have dreamed that I would see the history, which is just historical. Barack Obama, which is a black president of these United States, that is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And that is saying something, and it just gives me a different feeling about the system out here. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that I would hope that the younger generation that we have out here can take notice of the change that we have seen transpire. Mm-hmm. And it's important.
Okay, we're going to a different section now about history and social events. Tell me how it is for you, how do you feel about living in this community?
In Ann Arbor?
Mm-hmm.
Ann Arbor is a beautiful city, but I've been very disappointed over the last few years since I've lived here. To see Ann Arbor has regressed so much. We don't have no visibility of entrepreneur here, and it's very sad. And it's something that we need to communicate and talk about. And just to see the change in this system here in this community and the representation there. And it's sort of disappointing me very, very much. And just the idea, having came here when I was a young man and have seen what have transpired since I've been here, this invisible of blacks, combination of business and helping one another and being able to help themselves. And that need to be confirmed and need to be talked about and let people see what is happening. And it's unfortunate. And we need to mention that. I look at all the high rise building and all the things the universe is getting by with, and we working every day. And everybody talk about the university wouldn't be existing wasn't for the university. They ain't talking about the ordinary people who live here. I pay taxes twice a year. Mm-hmm. University ain't paying taxes. Mm-hmm. And we all live here. And that's quite a sacrifice. And it needs to be confirmed. That's why, therefore, I said we all need one another. And that means working together and doing things together and giving us strength and making us more visible in our direction.
What advice would you give to the younger generation?
The young generation is number one. I read that book from Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Jude, and Ruth. It says, the book tells, watch, well, let's pray. When you watch things, that's what I used to do with my father. I'd see his disposition and seeing what he was doing and his inner will. That give me a motivation and an instinct of drive. And that's what I try to tell these young people. Nothing from nothing leave nothing. I think we've gotten away from the discipline of our young people. Now we're trying to befriend them too much and give them everything. You got to be the parent and give them some direction. With the opportunity that they have now and the lack of disadvantage that our forefathers and parents, it's just sad to me. It's very unfortunate. And the next thing you look at, I might have to answer that later for you.
Okay. When thinking back over your entire life, what are you most proud of?
Number one, I'm proud to see the accomplishments and the commendation that have helped this system was Dr. Martin Luther King. Have given me that inner feeling and the sense of spirituality that he lived by that song, if I could help somebody as I pass along, then my living shall not be in vain. That's been an inspiration and a help to me. Mm-hmm. And to see these things transpire to that positive, it just moves me. And I can see what I see today is an elevation of seeing the instinct and direction and the drive of my new president, Barack Obama. And the lack of giving him any kind of decent respect and accomplishing what he's done, that's another thing we got to get away from. If people, you see what people have done, there's nothing wrong with saying, oh yes. You know, why be so negative about everything? Mm-hmm. And be true. Be true to ourselves, be true to others. There's nothing wrong with just facing the truth. And we need to talk about these things. And that's why I said, therefore we need one another. Mm-hmm. Okay, who you are. And that gives you that inner strength, that elevation, and progress. And you just something like you just on that, like you can see what Dr. Martin Luther King, it's just inspiration to me today to see all the things that he already accomplished, but he was reaching out, trying to help. That's why I say helping somebody. That means so much.
Okay, I think I'm ready to ask you the last question. How do you feel personally about doing this interview and its impact on you?
I think it's very inspiring. I think that it shows a sense that you have a feeling of reaching out and ideas and exchange with one another and having that communication with one another. That's a part of saying we all need one another. And we ascertain that attitude, we can get more elevation, give us more strength and more unity, and empower us to grow and be positive, accommodate one another. And it'll make us a better system to live in, world out here.
Thank you, Hallelujah. Pastor Rush.
Is that what they say? I think I better set up my little coffee can down there, I told the boys, and let them drop the donation in.